This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks.
One moment I was a carefree 17-year-old senior, and the next collateral damage is a 38 caliber bullet was ripping through my throat and tearing into my shoulder. I spent the next month in the hospital fighting for my life. Make no mistake about it, I'm here today because of the medical professionals who treated me. The second chance inspired me to become a trauma surgeon and give other people that same second chance. As a trauma surgeon, I and my colleagues are uniquely positioned to understand and address this issue.
Those are the words of trauma surgeon Dr. Joseph Sackern, who testified last week at a U.S. House Judiciary Committee meeting on gun violence prevention. He created the Twitter handle, "This Is Our Lane," in response to a tweet from the National Rifle Association asking doctors to, quote, stay in their lane and not to weigh in on the nation's gun violence situation. It's been a year since the deadly school shooting in Parkland, Florida, that left 17 people dead. And in a country shockingly accustomed to mass shootings, this one would prove to be different, sparking a level of unprecedented activism, particularly from young people. Here in Cincinnati, that's true, too, from the young and university students to the local medical community. People are pushing for change. Joining me now to talk about this are Mara Nickel, a second-year medical student at the University of Cincinnati College of Medicine, Dr. Megan L. Ranney, the chief research officer at Affirm, and Abby Euculus, whose 14-year-old niece was killed in the Parkland shooting. I want to thank you all for joining us today. Mara, I want to start with you. You're a second-year medical student, and you're the organizer of something called UC SAFE. Tell us what that is.
Yeah, so SAFE is a nationwide organization. It stands for Scrubs Addressing the Firearm Epidemic. So what our goal is to eliminate the firearm epidemic through research, education, and evidence-based policy.
Okay, and Dr. Ranney, Affirm, tell us what that is.
Affirm is the American Foundation for Firearm Injury Reduction in Medicine. We're proud to have over 15 medical organizations, including SAFE, as partners of ours. We were started by a group of committed physicians and other healthcare professionals who really hope to create the research and disseminate guidelines and protocols and policies so that physicians and other healthcare professionals and honestly communities across the United States can take action to end firearm injury.
And Abby, you lost your niece in the Parkland school shooting. Your niece's name, Jamie Gutenberg. What do you think the country has learned since that tragedy?
Thank you for having me on. I'm also a physician, which is, I think, part of why I'm in this segment. And my first reaction is that we've learned something. We've learned how painful it is for families to lose a member of their family. And we've learned that really any of us are at risk. And I think the demonstration of that knowledge is that now politicians are listening to their constituents and not only to special interests. So I was very pleased to watch a hearing yesterday on Capitol Hill by the House of Representatives where they took up the first gun safety. They had the first hearing on gun safety legislation in many, many years. I think we have a long way to go, and I think it's going to continue to be a long struggle, but I'm heartened by how much has happened in the past year. I only wish that my niece did not have to be a victim and that my family did not have to be so involved in this struggle.
Two of you are currently doctors. One of you will be a doctor. So a year, a couple years, whenever, three doctors. What is the role that doctors are going to be playing in this conversation? It's sort of a strange dynamic and not an obvious one to me, but to you it must be. So please, any of you chime in on what that role is for doctors in this conversation.
This is Megan. I think that the role of doctors is critical, right? Across history, we have taken care of victims of epidemics, right? That's our job, to care for patients, for people who are sick or injured. And for so many years, we have had no strategies to help us address this growing epidemic across the United States. Over the past 2 years, prior to Parkland and then obviously much more vocally since Parkland and even more so since this November. We as physicians, but also other healthcare professionals, right? Nurses, techs, social workers, physical therapists, have spoken up about the human toll of firearm injury. And I think that we have a really unique position in this country. We not only bear witness to the everyday effects of firearm injury on our patients and their communities, but we also know that we have the tools to stop this, the same way that we've done for other epidemics across history.
Abby, do you agree with that assessment?
Absolutely. Right after my niece was murdered, I tried to find a way to use my skills to get involved in this. And I quickly read articles by trauma surgeons and ER physicians about what they saw when gun violence victims were brought into the hospital. In fact, when my niece was murdered that very afternoon, I called contacts that I had in emergency departments in Florida. We were trying to find her. We were desperate. We didn't know where she was. So, you know, I knew that there was a role for doctors because the victims were either being cared for doctors in a hospital or they were already tragically dead. So when I returned home from Florida, I quickly looked to see if there were other physicians who were involved in this. And that is how I came across Dr. Rani and several others. And they were all laboring for several years already on the topic without much attention. Thankfully, they were told to stay in their lane by the National Rifle Association at some point, I think it was in November. And that sort of unleashed a national, it did unleash a national response from many, many physicians who said, hashtag, this is our lane. Because we are caring for these people when they come to our hospital.
Let's give some background on that. It was the American College of Physicians that released a position paper on reducing firearm injuries and deaths, and the NRA, the National Rifle Association, put out a tweet on November 7th that said someone should tell self-important anti-gun doctors to stay in their lane. And Dr. Joseph Sakharin, he said, my first reaction was kind of incensed, and then he created the Twitter account at This Is Our Lane. He encouraged other medical professionals to share their experiences in treating victims of gun violence. And the fact is, tragedies like Parkland and other mass shootings dominate media coverage in the national conversation on this issue. But every day in communities across the country, here in Cincinnati and other large cities, you're hearing about a shooting here, a shooting there. And there are victims behind those stories. There are people with bullet wounds in those stories. They end up in your surgery rooms, in your offices, and requiring years of treatment. So how does the medical field then, in this lane, address those concerns so that the public understands that you are somebody that you should listen to? Mara, on your campus, the University of Cincinnati, this must be something that you're discussing in your organization.
Right. So, I mean, it is a public health issue. We're here to promote the safety and the health of our patients, and this is just another way to go about it is through public policy and research. So right now what we're focused on in SAFE is to find your role in this epidemic. How can you help? Obviously, as a trauma surgeon, you're directly in this kind of epidemic, seeing the patients that have been shot with bullet wounds. But there's so many other aspects to it, from family care to internal medicine, all sorts of things that can be involved in it. So our goal as a club right now is to bring in different physicians from these different specialties to help us find our role. We're the next generation of physicians, so we need to find our role now to get started working when we become physicians.
So UC SAFE is a chapter that started after the Parkland shooting?
Yes.
Okay. And Dr. Rani, about Affirm, was that an organization that existed prior to this streak of deadly mass shootings in the country?
Yeah, so Affirm was created about a year and a half ago after many years of work by myself and my co-founder and the other physicians that were kind of key initiators of the organization to really create a collective will of medicine that we're so proud to have the partnership of organizations ranging from the American College of Surgeons to SAFE to the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology and Pediatrics and the American College of Physicians and many others. Our goal is to make it possible for us to talk about this. For so many years, we were told that firearm injury was something that we could do nothing about, that we couldn't do research on, and is safe as a witness to or a testament to. We were told that it was something we couldn't really talk to patients about. And Affirm came out of a growing movement among docs, really since Sandy Hook, that said that we weren't willing to be silent, that we knew that we did have a role.
So how has your organization changed now that there appears to be a broader and more intense national conversation on this topic in the past year?
It's a great question. We're actually preparing for our second annual retreat in just a week. And actually just got off a phone call with my co-founder, and we're just marveling. I mean, we have over 40,000 physicians and other healthcare professionals across the country who are part of the organization now. It's growing by leaps and bounds every week. The thirst for this knowledge, the need for education that SAFE is working on is just tremendous. And we're very honored to be able to help create that network, collect the data, and then create the education and protocols that all of us across the country so desperately need.
The organization Affirm, according to the website, has six major goals. I'll summarize some of those for the listeners now. One, raise research funds among diverse private sector financial resources, create infrastructure with expert leadership, provide funds to qualified researchers, to sponsor professional working groups for the development of best practice recommendations, cooperate with academic and professional medical standards organizations to integrate research evidence into medical education and health practices, and lastly, to conduct quality assurance of completed research and educational materials. Dr. Rani, are those goals being achieved by your organization?
They are. We really see our strategy as being trying to take the quickest and shortest approach to preventing firearm injury and saving lives. We've been tremendously successful with fundraising. We have our first research opportunities out. The closing date for the first couple of them is actually next week. We have an incredible team and an incredible group of leaders from across the country, ranging from folks down in San Antonio to people in Nevada to people in Boston and New York and California. It's just been really exciting to see the very quick progress that we've made in starting to achieve those goals. You know, I think Dr. Youkilis talked about kind of the testimony on the Hill yesterday, and we're thrilled to have government be part of this, but we're also not willing to wait. You know, there's over 100 Americans that die across the country every day, and they deserve solutions now. Their families and their communities deserve solutions now, and we're excited to be creating those.
This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. We're talking today to Dr. Abby Youkilis, a board-certified internal medicine physician who specializes in primary care. She lost a niece in the shooting at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida. We're joined on the phone by Megan L. Rani, the chief research officer and a doctor at Affirm. She's on the phone from Rhode Island, you're calling in from. And Mara Nickel, a second-year medical student from the UC College of Medicine and the organizer of the campus organization UC Safe. So we're at the one-year anniversary of the Parkland shooting, Dr. Youkilis, and that's where your niece died. I hate to ask you to relive any of those moments, and you did touch upon it briefly earlier, but can you tell us more about that day and the chaos that ensues in one of those situations for your family, for other families that are more closely associated with what was happening?
So I was sitting at my desk working. It was about 3:30, and I noticed on my phone a quick blurb about a shooting and basically thought to myself, whatever, big deal. You know, those happen all the time. Didn't pay much attention. The next warning, the next headline that came across was shooting in Parkland, Florida. That got my attention, and I immediately texted my brother. I have a very close family, and he texted me back. I have Jesse, that's my nephew, but we can't find Jamie, and she was my niece. So that led to several hours of large texting among many, many people. And we tried to use whatever resources we had, people we knew, to try to figure out where she was. We knew she was in the school because her phone was pinging from the school, but we did not hear from her. And she was a 14-year-old girl. For her not to contact anybody was very uncharacteristic. So we were extremely worried. And essentially, it went on like that until about 6 o'clock when one of my brother Fred's, he was Jamie's father, when one of Fred's friends, who was a SWAT police officer, stumbled upon Jamie, and he had known her since she was a little girl. This is a, Parkland is a very small community. And that is how we actually became the first family to learn the unfortunate, devastating news. So quickly, my parents and I arranged to go down to Florida, where we spent a good deal of time. And, you know, it's been awful. And when they talked about this anniversary show, I thought to myself, we don't need an anniversary to remember this. We think about it every minute of every day. So I'm appreciative that people are thinking about it on the anniversary, but for us, every day is awful. And I do want to point out that every day is an anniversary for somebody. There are gunshot victims all over the country, and even if they don't happen in the big stories are happening every day in every community, and all of us are at risk. All of our family members are at risk. There are over 300 million guns in the country, so really nobody is immune. And my family has become very involved on this topic, and our goal is not to remove guns from any law-abiding citizen. We are strong supporters of the Second Amendment, but there are things that can be done to keep guns away from those who should not have them. And people from all parts of the political spectrum should be able to agree on that. Actually, I brought along some recommendations, if you don't mind me looking through some of them, from the American College of Surgeons. And it was a committee that included many gun owners and many NRA members. And they came up with a group of recommendations, which I will try to summarize. Just first, robust background checks. Number two, they support firearm registration. Number three, reassessment of the firearms designated within each of the NFA classifications. They support formal gun safety training. They would like to require safe and controlled firearm storage. They think that individuals who pose an imminent threat to themselves or others should have ownership temporarily or permanently restricted. They want to develop new firearm technology that would significantly reduce the risk of harm. And they believe in research. And they also believe that if people see something, they should say something.
We had had mass shootings in this country prior to Parkland. We've had mass shootings since Parkland. But that particular shooting in which your niece lost her life became significant in a lasting way because of the students at that school who rose up in the aftermath of that and demanded action. March for Our Lives comes to mind. A huge, huge following for these kids on social media now. What do you think your niece would think of her classmates in these days?
Oh, I think she would be very proud of them. Basically, she was one, if she saw an injustice happening, she would want to correct it. And this is clearly an injustice that we're perpetrating, especially on our next generation, on our students. So I think she would be all in favor.
Mara, at the University of Cincinnati, where you're an organizer of UC Safe, what type of programming is your organization conducting, and what are the conversations like?
Yeah, so we recognize that it is our goal as the next generation of physicians to tackle this issue. So what we're doing now in our first year, as I said before, we're trying to find our role in this. How are we going to approach this? We've been having talks. We had a talk with Dr. Falcone. He's a trauma surgeon, on what he thinks his role is, to kind of get ideas. So and then from there, we hope to get more involved in research and education outside of the College of Medicine.
What impact on the study of medicine have these events had, Mara?
Yeah, so we actually, as first years, we are trained in a class to recognize when we should be involved with gun violence. This year, they're going to be having a practice session where you get to practice talking to patients about guns and whether they're locked up and safe, especially when children aren't in play. So I think it is going to have, it's already having a large role, but I think in the future it's going to be even greater.
And Dr. Rani, is that something that you're seeing different for medical students? Has this impacted their studies at all in a way that makes them more prepared to deal with this type of violence?
Absolutely. It is starting to. I mean, I think we have to start from the bottom up with students. We also have to start from the perspective of the folks that have been practicing for decades. Kind of training both sides in parallel is what will make a big difference. There's some really great efforts going on, again, including the work of SAFE. There's a great CME or continuing medical education opportunity that's free that was recently put out by the American Medical Association. It was designed by folks from Affirm as well as folks from UC Davis Violence Prevention Center. There are resources from various medical societies across the country that are being created. These together can enable us to have respectful conversations with at-risk patients. I don't think any of us as physicians want to see a patient be put in harm's way. And the goal with these conversations is to really identify at-risk patients and help keep them safe in those moments of risk.
Dr. Youkilis, you have a child who's a student in Cincinnati Public Schools. Tell us a little bit about the work that you've done with that school district.
I haven't done a whole lot of work with it, except I did write something when they
were spoke out about
trying
measures.
To implement the metal detectors.
Yes.
So I think I had something on one of the local papers. But basically, the local schools have implemented metal detectors, and my problem with it wasn't so much the metal detectors. There was a lack of communication that it was happening, and the implementation has not been ideal. There are still lots of ways around them. And I guess another problem I had with it was that it made the kids feel like they were suspect. And so I think if it had been communicated better, differently, maybe they wouldn't have had that same feeling. They would have just realized it was there for their own safety. I find it extremely unfortunate that we need to do this, but in the society that we are now living in with a number of firearms, that's the place we find ourselves in. And I know there's been a big focus on school safety around the country, and I think it's important, but I want people to realize that the schools are not the only place that need to remain safe. People are shot at football games. You mentioned earlier Dr. Sacharin, who's very involved with This Is Our Lane. He himself was is a gunshot survivor. He was shot at a football game when he was a teenager, and it had a tremendous impact on his life, and he went on to become a trauma surgeon. So there are shootings there. There are shootings in movie theaters. There are shootings in shopping malls. There are shootings in people's homes due to unsecured firearms. So I feel like we are falsely giving ourselves security when we're only protecting schools. If we really want to protect children, we need to protect everywhere. Gunshot wounds are the second leading cause of death now in children and the number one leading cause of death in African-American children.
If you want to learn more about the organizations that we talked about today, you can find links online at wvxu.org. Dr. Abby Youkilis, Dr. Megan Rani, and future Dr. Mara Nicol. Thank you all for coming on and talking about this very difficult subject today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This is Cincinnati Edition. On 91.7 WVXU, I'm Michael Monks. Cincinnati Mayor John Cranley is in Washington, D.C. today with other mayors and chiefs of police from large U.S. cities. They're taking part in a roundtable discussion on gun safety legislation. I spoke with the mayor earlier. Okay, Mayor, so you're going to be in Washington, D.C. talking about gun issues. You've got a role in the National Mayor's Organization. Tell us a little bit about what you plan to say there. You've been asked to speak.
Yeah, obviously gun violence is affecting the whole country. Mass shootings now appears on a weekly basis, not to mention the epidemic of gun violence in inner cities that have happened for decades. As you all know, here in Cincinnati, we had the Fifth Third shooting at near the same time that we had a drive-by shooting in the West End with multiple victims. One, unfortunately, has been routine for decades. And the other was brought to attention similar to school shootings and workplace shootings that have unfortunately increased throughout time and time again. As a member of the U.S. Conference of Mayors, which is our national organization of mayors, I am the chairman of the task force that involves mayors and police chiefs. And so this week in D.C., the major city police chiefs, you know, it's like the mayor, the chief of Houston, Texas, is the head of that organization. They have their annual meeting. Our chief, Chief Elliot Isaac, is there, and I'll be joining them tomorrow to speak with members of Congress and the chiefs about common cause efforts to keep officers and communities safe by, for example, requiring background checks, closing the loopholes that get people around the background checks, and a number of other issues that affect police chiefs and mayors and cities across the country.
What role do you see municipal leaders like yourself playing in this national conversation about gun safety, gun control, gun violence?
Well, unfortunately, it's affecting all of us in this country too often. And we are the ones, while right-wing legislatures in states like Ohio and in Congress that are beholden to right-wing interests, are callous in the face of Las Vegas or Orlando or Sandy Hook or Columbine or Cincinnati or Pittsburgh synagogue mass murder. We at the local level are the ones who have to console the aggrieved, to pick up the pieces whose officers are in danger on a regular basis. And we are demanding change, both at the national level, but also at state levels, and to the extent that we can take local action, local actions. Now, recently we banned bump stocks here in the city of Cincinnati, you know, which is common sense and is not taking away anyone's gun, which is the bump stock was what allowed the Las Vegas shooter to turn what was a regular gun into a machine gun. And murdered, I believe, 57 people and injured permanently many others. And unfortunately, a judge has struck that down. We're going to appeal it. But once again, I believe in the principle that the government closest to the people is the best, which used to be a conservative Republican philosophy. And increasingly, we see these right-wing Republican-controlled legislatures in Columbus and Congress taking away local control, local issues. And police chiefs and mayors are asking to give back local control of issues like this because we know our communities best.
We've had our own tragedies here in Cincinnati, not only at Fountain Square, but in our communities semi-regularly, unfortunately.
Yep.
And it's been a year since the Parkland shooting that yep. resulted in the death of many high school students and staff at a school there. And that was really the shooting that seemed to launch a level of activism on this issue that we hadn't seen previously. Do you think that we have succeeded in any areas as a nation since that event a year ago?
Unfortunately, you know, the influence of right-wing groups that capture state houses and Congress have made it really difficult. I know that we at the Conference of Mayors are going to be hosting a series of meetings on April 10th and 11th in Toledo, Ohio, on things we can do at the local level. But one of the things we did do at the local level was ban bump stocks, and once again, we have it struck down by a judge who's claiming that it's been preempted by the right-wing legislature that runs the state of Ohio. So, there are certainly efforts. We're trying to make progress, but we continue to be stymied. Obviously, there are states like California and New York, which are not controlled by these right-wing groups, that have been able to make progress, but it's too few progress for the rest of us that are subject to these dictatorial from on high, you know, decrees that local government can't do anything about local problems.
Cincinnati Mayor John Cranley, thanks so much for taking some time to talk with us.
Thank you.
That was Cincinnati Mayor John Cranley talking to us earlier. Let's continue the discussion on gun safety at the local level. To remember the victims of the deadly shooting at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida, which happened a year ago, a vigil is planned for Saturday at Christ Church Cathedral downtown. It's organized by Ohio Students for Gun Legislation in partnership with the Young Activist Coalition, Moms Demand Action, Students Demand Action, and the Ohio Coalition Against Gun Violence. We're joined now by Wyoming High School senior Roslyn Krupp. She's a leader of the Young Activist Coalition. Welcome, Michelle. Welcome, Roslyn.
Thank you.
Michelle's our next guest. Michelle Mueller, the local lead for the Cincinnati team for Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense in America. Welcome, Michelle.
Thank you.
And Hamilton County Clerk of Courts, Aftab Purval, who will speak at Saturday's vigil. Thanks for being here, Aftab.
Of course. Thanks for having us.
And if you want to weigh in on this conversation, give us a call at 513-419-7100. You can also email talk@wvxu.org or find us on Facebook or Twitter. We'll look for your comments and your tweets and possibly include some in the show if you have questions or comments. So the keynote speaker at this vigil on Saturday is Ethel Guttenberg. And
yes.
Her granddaughter, Jamie, was killed in the Parkland shooting. We spoke earlier in this show with Jamie's aunt. So we have this local family who was directly impacted by this shooting. Roslyn, why did this tragedy in Parkland lead to organization and action here at the local level?
Well, it did happen in Parkland, yes, but it can also happen across the United States. And I think for me especially, it was just the realization that this was not a sequestered event. This was not a one-time thing. Parkland was actually very similar to the city that I grew up in, Wyoming, Ohio. And just seeing those similarities, it made me realize that gun violence is an issue that affects us all. So it doesn't matter that we're miles away. It doesn't matter that we're in the Midwest and not in Florida. It's still an issue that affects us, and it's still something we need to fight. So it made sense that this had to be a national movement. It couldn't just be in Florida. It had to be in every single state in the U.S. And for that reason, we decided to have the March for Our Lives almost a year ago in Cincinnati.
This wasn't the first mass shooting that this country has seen. Goodness knows that. And hasn't been the last one either.
No.
What was it, do you think, about that one in particular that led to this passion from people like you?
I think it's the focus on the young people, because we're the ones who go to school every single day. We're the ones who sit in classrooms and have our lives potentially in danger by anyone coming in at any moment. And I think that when you took it to the people who it directly affected, you had all of that passion there just because we live through this reality every single day. You can advocate for someone else. Adults can definitely advocate for us. They still face gun violence just like we do. But when the students use their own voices and they have their own passion and they're the ones rising up, it's a much stronger message. And then also just having student activism is very important. We've seen in history with the civil rights movement and with women's rights, when young people take the reins, then stuff happens. So it's important to have the young voices included. And I think that that kind of youthful activism is part of the reason why this became a national conversation.
And Michelle, you were motivated to become active after the deadly school shooting in Sandy Hook.
That's right.
And that happened in 2012.
That's right.
Parkland happened in 2018. Mm-hmm. In your view, are these efforts working? Are things getting better? Are they getting worse?
They are getting better. When we, you know, that was a rude awakening, let's say, when you go back to Sandy Hook, and that's what made me literally jump off the couch watching that terrible mass shooting unfold on the you know, TV set. And I decided that my husband and I that, you know, it was all about, we're grandparents, and, you know, it was all about protecting our children at that time. I saw how frightened our granddaughter was. She was 8 years old to go back to school. And then, of course, we saw very quickly chapters of Shannon Watts started the organization the day after Sandy Hook. So that was 2012. 4 months after that was when we watched the Manchin-Toomey bill, the background check bill, fail by like 7 votes. That was in April of 2013. And it was, the entire nation thought for certain, for sure, after this terrible mass shooting, killing all these young children that were 6 and 7 years old, it was just for sure going to pass. It was a wake-up call to our organization and I think America that, you know, this is a marathon. It's not a sprint. So we continued to just, you know, do what we do, advocate for gun safety, common sense solutions. But we're at a point constantly, sort of bridging that gap between the will of the people and the lawmakers. And I think when you look back and look at the accomplishments, you can actually go on our website, in particular, just for MomsDemandAction.org, you can see the victories over the past 6 years. Just looking at, so we are making progress. We have 20 states now that have passed their own universal comprehensive background checks. We have multiple states, and especially since Parkland passed red flag laws. These are all positive advances and actions. So it's about bridging this gap between the lawmakers and the will of the people. The majority of the nation, 80 to 95%, 88% in general, want to support background checks. So there is progress. We were able to say in just our work in 2018, our organization was able to block 90% of the NRA's most dangerous resolutions or gun bills that they introduced. So it is a bill-by-bill, vote-by-vote situation, and we stay very vigilant.
AFTAB, prior to being elected, you volunteered in a domestic violence clinic to protect battered women, and then you became a special assistant federal prosecutor where you worked with the FBI to prosecute crimes against children. That's according to your bio. There doesn't seem to be a greater crime against children than gunning them down while they're at school. So what laws need to change in this country?
Yeah, you're exactly right. I echo Michelle's comments that things are getting better. Michelle has a motto, a pendant she wears around her neck that she's currently wearing today that says, keep going. And it's because of her activism and the activism of incredible young people like Rosaline, who had such a profound impact on the midterm elections just this past year, many of whom were not even old enough to vote, but were so passionate about sensible gun reform that they rolled up their sleeves, knocked doors, made phone calls, did everything they possibly could to elect gun reform candidates. And, you know, laws are the best way. Government intervention is the best way in order to keep children safe, because while there's so much to be optimistic about, 17 children were murdered a year ago at Parkland. Since that date, 1,200 children have been killed by a gun since. Gun deaths are on the rise in our country, unfortunately. So we do need government intervention. The good news is over half, since that time, over half of our states have enacted some kind of gun sense legislation, whether it's red flag laws in Florida or raising the age of someone to purchase a gun in other parts of the country. We need to continue that state-by-state legislation. And then also just yesterday in the House Judiciary Committee, H.R. 8 was passed out of the committee and will now reach the floor and will likely be passed out of the floor, which is exactly what we're talking about, universal background checks. Because what we can't lose sight of, Parkland is an incredibly important and essential event to hold on to. So is Sandy Hook. So are so many other school shootings. But shootings are not isolated to our schools. They're happening in our communities, on our streets, in our corners. And it's going to take this kind of comprehensive legislation in order to address the epidemic of gun violence.
513-419-7100 if you'd like to weigh in. Also email talk@wvxu.org or find us on Facebook or Twitter where we'll look for your comments and your tweets. Mark's on the line. What's your question?
Well, it was kind of an idea with a question. The founder of Dick's Sporting Goods, you did a story a couple days ago, Public Radio did, about him becoming kind of an unlikely opponent for gun control. They're going to or already have stopped selling assault rifles. So there's actually a boycott. There's a backlash, and I wonder if anyone has suggested a kind of a reverse boycott, celebrating what he's done.
Okay.
Or you could just, you know, go in and buy a Frisbee or whatever.
All right.
And if not, if someone should start that.
Thanks for that comment, Mark. What do you all think about that when some of the corporations weigh in on this debate one way or the other?
I think it's emblematic of what you're seeing across the country. Mm-hmm. Because after Columbine, after Sandy Hook, after Virginia Tech, because our leaders in Congress and our state houses have done nothing, It's been on citizens in our country, whether they be in the corporate sector or, as we heard earlier in the hour, from the healthcare field. It's on us all to come together and create a change in the ways that we can. I think corporate citizens making these kinds of change should be applauded, and they should absolutely be supported. Mm-hmm. But, you know, ultimately, I do think in order to fully address this issue in a comprehensive and universal way, we're going to need state legislation and we're going to need federal legislation.
More on this discussion and more comments and phone calls from you after this short break. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition On Demand. Did you know you can have the show delivered straight to your smartphone every day? Just go to your favorite podcast listening app, search Cincinnati Edition, and subscribe. You'll be able to keep up with all our great conversations with newsmakers, public officials, and other interesting people from the greater Cincinnati region and beyond on the go, anytime, anywhere. It's great for those days you can't tune in to catch us live. Weekdays at noon on 91.7 WVXU. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. A vigil is planned for Saturday at Christ Church Cathedral in downtown Cincinnati in honor of the victims of the mass shooting at Stoneman Douglas High School, which happened a year ago. We're joined now by Wyoming High School senior Roslyn Krupp, leader of the Young Activist Coalition, Michelle Mueller, the local lead for the Cincinnati team of Moms Demand Action for Gun Sense in America, and Hamilton County Clerk of Courts, Aftab Purval, who will speak at Saturday's event. We're going to go back to the phone lines now. Andrew is on the line. What's your comment, Andrew?
Hi, how you doing?
Doing well. Thanks for calling.
Well, you know, first off, I want to say that, you know, I'm 32, so I'm young enough to appreciate, you know, what the children are going through here. I grew up with Columbine when I was a young kid, and I'm also old enough to appreciate the parents who are dealing with it. So it's like I grew up in a household with firearms. My dad was a police officer in the Army, and my grandpa was an avid gun owner. And so I grew up shooting guns, and but I'm not going to say that I'm against any sort of reform that would, you know, stop this from happening. But I often wonder, how much are we focusing on the reform aspect of restricting firearms and not enough focus on the issues that cause these shootings? You know, the children who are hurt and scarred enough to want to take a gun to school and shoot everybody, the children who have issues that haven't been addressed by their parents or society at all.
So you're wondering how much of a focus is on mental health rather than gun control itself.
Right, because okay. I think we can reform all the gun laws we want, but if we don't focus on, you know, what causes the shootings, these kids are going to find a way to hurt people one way or another.
All right, Andrew, thanks for the call. Thoughts?
I definitely think that mental health does have a very important part in this debate. I don't think it's the only part of the debate, and I think that often Republican policymakers try to make it the focal point and try to ignore guns when guns are the problem. But I definitely think that mental health also is another facet that needs to be addressed. If we don't address mental health, we're not solving the long-term issue. But it's definitely a tandem of the two, and I don't really appreciate our Republican policymakers who try to just focus on mental health and ignore the side that we're calling for common sense gun legislation.
We got a comment from Kate. She wants to know how you all feel about whether gun sellers should face criminal liability in shootings.
Yeah, so Every Town for Gun Safety and Moms Demand Action just rolled out our 5-point plan. It's called Let's Break the Pattern. You can learn more about it at letsbreakthepattern.org. That is one of our 5 points that we're going to address in 2019, and that is holding the gun industry accountable. Again, we would like to see that the lawmakers reverse that special treatment. They are protected right now by law. They are shielded from accountability. So that is the PLACA law. So we are urging our lawmakers to repeal that that law and hold them accountable. And again, as a result, there's just been no cost to the industry for failing to make guns safer or for marketing weapons and hardware that have no place in the hands of victims. So that is a big part of our intention and our campaign for 2019.
Aftab, you're going to be one of the speakers at this vigil on Saturday. What are we going to hear from you?
I'm going to try and focus my comments on the personal stories about the incredible trauma that gun violence happens on the families, on the communities that are suffering through it. Certainly at Parkland, just reading this morning in the paper about a young man who was a student at Parkland and barricaded himself in front of a door, was shot 5 times in order to save the lives of his fellow classmates, his fellow teachers. Miraculously, he's still alive. He's a survivor. But he's homeschooled because he's terrified of going back to school or frankly leaving his home. Another survivor of Parkland, I think, who was a sophomore at the time, lost 3 of her friends. She wants to graduate and go to Ireland, where she says there are no guns. First responders who are still suffering from PTSD after what they saw in Parkland. And of course, the stories from the Sandy Hook parents. I remember, similar to Michelle, I got involved principally in the movement after Sandy Hook because I remember the stories of the pictures of these 6 and 7 year olds missing front teeth, holding teddy bears, the stories of their families after this trauma, not touching their rooms, preserving their memory, imagining that they were just outside playing so they could just get through the day. We focus so much on the statistics that sometimes we miss the profound impact that that these events have on the personal stories and narratives.
Rosaline, one of the messages that arose out of the Parkland tragedy, and you often see it on the Twitter feed of the survivor David Hogg, quote, "The young people will win." What does that mean?
I think that means before Parkland, young people had no place in the gun violence debate, which I think is interesting because we have so much to contribute since we go to school every day and live through it every day. And I think that with Parkland, there has been a recognition of the youth voice. So I think that that means that the young people aren't going to be ignored. They're not going to be cast aside. Our voices are going to stay present in this matter. I think for me, victory is no more gun violence. And that's really hard to achieve. It's going to take a long time. Like Michelle said, it's a marathon. It's not a sprint. But I think at the end of the day, what we all want are safe public places. We want students to be able to go to their classrooms and not worry about being gunned down. We want families to be able to go to movie theaters and not have to worry about exit points and how to get out if there was a shooting. And I think that the ultimate goal is safety. And it's a simple goal, but it's very hard to achieve, unfortunately, because we all want safety. We all want the protection of our lives, but it's more difficult than just saying that. And like we've said, it resides on our legislators to really secure that safety for their constituents because it's a basic human right and we should be guaranteed it.
This vigil is Saturday from 11 to 12:30 at Christ Church Cathedral in downtown Cincinnati. I want to thank Rosaline Aftab and Michelle for coming down and talking to us about this today.
Thank you so much.
Course, thank you so much.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Archives of our program can be found online at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks.